Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Ryan Kelly Morning After, 590 The Fan, KFNS. Send your emails in. Hot Shots email today coming your way at 945 The Morning After at InsideSTL.com. Giving away a Blues beer stein presented by Budweiser. Get yours at Scottrade this Wednesday. Blues Flames. First 12,000 fans that are 21 and up get the Blues beer stein. Blues analyst Kelly Chase joins us weekly on Thursday mornings, fueled by Petromart. Start all your pregame festivities at Petromart, a proud sponsor of your St. Louis Blues and a proud supplier of Phillips 66 gasoline. Not only can you fill up on gas when you stop at one of Petromart's stores, you can fill your stomach too. They offer a wide variety of food, drink, and other goodies to satisfy you and your family.
Yeah. Or the whoever. Pause was good.
I thought that helped.
The pause
very
was
people
good.
Like, I wonder who you're going to satisfy.
It's just very dramatic is what it is.
Petromart, clean, fast, and friendly. And then, Doug, you got a floating deal? You float, bro?
Well, I did. I did a couple weeks ago for the first time.
How was it?
I never really had heard of it, but it was different than anything that you will ever do, and it's really pretty cool. Plowsy has done it a few times.
I'm good friends with the owner of Presence Float Center, and I absolutely recommend it. I've done it four or five times, and I highly recommend anybody who has any high stress in their life or anything like that. It's a good relaxation. Takes an hour out of your day. It's beautiful.
Do you leave refreshed?
I leave refreshed, yeah,
that's
yes.
That's a selling point.
Relaxed is more like how you relieve.
Yeah.
How you leave. It's not so much refreshing, it's just like a total relaxation experience.
Yes, highly recommend.
So if you're on a show where there's hot take, and it's rapid fire, high stress, ooh, someone's going to question my hot take, you go and you float, and all your worries just float away.
We should probably have a pod here somewhere.
That would be
show,
great.
One by one, we go in.
It sounds very appealing.
I think we should. Well, now the listeners have a chance to get in on this. We have had some of these listener reward programs before, and now we have another one. Presence Float Center is our latest listener rewards program. Starting a week from today, next Monday, the 30th, you can relieve your stress with 50% off a 75-minute session at Presence Float Center. That's a $49 value for only $24.50, less than 33 cents a minute for what will be one of the most relaxing experiences of your life. Once you step into the saltwater pod and get comfortable, the soothing music will ease your mind and body, allowing you to enjoy a much calmer state than normal. You won't know where your body ends and the water begins. Your muscles will be totally relaxed, and you won't even sense the passage of time. Mm. I was in there for an hour. It seemed like it was about 10 minutes.
Did you have a stepdad with you?
I did not. No, but I was naked.
Clip that off.
You do naked in the saltwater pods. Presence Float Center is perfect for athletes looking to rejuvenate themselves, overworked professionals needing a break, veterans and first responders dealing with PTSD, and even local sportscasters who have a demanding relationship with lady journalists. So take advantage of this offer to get a 75-minute experience at Presence Float Center for 50% off. That's starting next Monday the 30th. Just log on to InsideSTL.com and click on the Listener Rewards tab. It really is a very unique experience that is growing in popularity, and once you go through it, you will understand why that is.
All right, every Monday during the college football season, we're joined by TJ Moe, presented by Joe Bacardi's.
It's time for Mizzou Monday, brought to you by Joe Bacardi's, former slot receiver and 590's own TJ Moe.
Underneath, TJ Moe sidesteps a man, gets to the 45.
Made one of the most famous plays in Missouri history.
Left sideline, he's got a seam. TJ Moe to the 30, to the 20, to the 10, to the house.
And now, he's talking all things Tigers.
Missouri, good football teams. Those college teams are good, huh?
Thanks to Joe Bacardi's, with locations in Eureka, Webster Groves, Columbia, Benton, and Tapawingo Golf Club. Find out how they can help you with events and catering at joebacardis.com.
And joining us right now is TJ Moe. Good morning, TJ.
Morning, guys. I have a feeling after watching the Missouri-Kansas game yesterday that basketball season is going to be a lot more fun than football season's been for us.
Yeah, but not when you have Idaho come to town and a trip to stores on your itinerary, Doug.
Yeah, well, you know what I think of the scheduling.
Doug's not happy with the scheduling. Doug was happy to see the Block M return to the helmet, but didn't like that it didn't match the uniforms. TJ, what do you think of the uniforms?
I like the old uniforms. I like the new ones, too. I think they're fine. I'm fine with having a lot of uniforms, but I don't like that we got rid of the old ones. I wore that old Block M for 3 years, not the 1960s Block M. But we had a good helmet. I thought Mizzou's old uniforms were some of the best in football. I think everybody's changing to some degree, but I would have kept those around.
But somebody decided what we need is some anthracite up in this here. Or all white,
Doug,
or all
Doug,
black.
Doug, you wear anthracite, be honest.
I don't wear it. I don't. Did we learn anything at all from the win? Or is that, did you get excited to see him roll up a lot of points against the Vandals?
No. You know, the one thing I think you could that I was excited about was watching Larry Roundtree run the football. The kid, I know you were playing Idaho, but he looked like Marshawn Lynch a couple times. Mm-hmm. If you have that kind of aggression running the football, yes, it matters who you're playing against, absolutely. I mean, Idaho, I heard Tim point this out earlier, is so bad that they're dropping down to FCS next year. So they're not a good program. But that you don't see that style of running very often. That's a tough thing to find. And I think, you know, I think Roundtree was actually the one who let the cat out of the bag there that Demario Crockett had surgery. That was according to a Dave Matter tweet. So I think you'd expect to see a lot more Larry Roundtree over the next five games.
Now, Idaho has a unique defense wherein they do not cover the tight end. They're just going to let him go. He'll cover other receivers, not the tight end, which
you
I
know
thought
what I was wondering,
interesting.
Yes, that's right. What I was wondering about halfway through that game after watching Albert O run right up the middle at 6'5", 260 pounds, and catch three touchdowns, well, how is that not something you take advantage of just holistically? I mean, you watch the NFL guys do it. I understand Albert O is not an NFL guy yet, but I bet he will be. I heard about him the first day he showed up on campus. The coaches thought he'd be an NFL tight end. So if you watch the NFL guys run straight up the seam, you watch Gronk do it like crazy. You see Travis Kelce do it. You watch Tony Gonzalez do it for years. And you're talking about big, tall dudes that are athletic and can move. And they're 6'5", 6'6". And safeties are all about 5'10". If you have a 6'4 safety, he's not very good. I mean, that is a rarity. Cam Chancellor is, but he plays mostly down inside the box there. Why don't you just move that guy, run him right up the middle, and toss it up? Because it's not like Drew Locke is great at breaking down defenses and just picking you apart like Chase Daniel used to. I don't understand why you don't run that play 9 times a game.
Well, I've been saying that forever. You don't need 6'5 receivers. You need 6'10", 6'7-foot receivers. Just lob it up. Here you go, alley-oop. Got it. Gain of 8. How could any 5'10 cornerback ever cover that?
Well, yeah, it's hard to find those athletes. I mean, I guess probably Michael Porter Jr. could do it, but he'd probably break in half the first time you hit him. Jonte Porter, maybe. Like, you got a few of those kids. There's just not many. But you're right. As far as, you know, having taller kids out there, 6'5 is the real answer, because you can still be as athletic as Denari Alexander. But you know, once you get too much taller than that, they got a kid out there now. His name's Justice Smith, not to be confused with Justin Smith of the 49ers and Cincinnati Bengals. But that kid's about 6'7", and he doesn't even play. So there's something to, you know, still being within the margin of error there at 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", and being able to run. But when you are that big and you can run, there's a 5'10 kid standing near you. I don't know why. Why are the days of tossing it up to Chase Coffman and Michael Agnew gone? I don't understand that.
I don't know. You're way too young to remember a receiver the Chiefs had named Morris Stroud, who was probably 6'10", and the Eagles had Harold Carmichael, who was about 6'7", 6'8". They were awfully difficult to stop for a lot of years in the NFL. I think the NFL could probably find some ex-college basketball players not good enough to play in the NBA who would be able to handle that. But,
well, yeah, we've already seen that to some degree. I mean, Antonio Gates is that guy. Jimmy Graham was that guy. Yeah. These are a bunch of guys that played college basketball and flipped over, and you're right. But, for tight ends, I think that works, absolutely. I mean, can you imagine Gronk at 6'7" underneath? Banging on, but he could have played in the NBA if he wanted to, that kind of athleticism. So I think you're 100% right. I don't know why you go away from that stuff. There is something to these 5'10" kids do have 40-inch verticals, so if you do have a 6'10" kid that's not very athletic, they're all still going to get picked off. But if you do find some athletes that are 6'6", 6'7", and can jump like everybody else, I mean, those guys turn into All-Americans. So when you have a tight end running up the seam like that, I think you should run 8-9 times a game.
Yeah, I do too. So are you a fan of scheduling teams like Idaho and Connecticut just so you get your 6 wins and go to a bowl game? Because I know for a lot of fans, they don't get a lot of they don't find a lot of interest or enjoyment in watching some of those games.
Teams don't really find enjoyment in playing those games, to be honest with you. I mean, it's not a waste of time, but it kind of is. I said a while ago, I think college football needs to be completely revamped. I think you have too many conferences, too many. It shouldn't be a Power 5, it should be a Power 4. The Big 12 needs to go away. And right now, the way you have it set up, if the Big 12 went and disintegrated, you could add four teams to the Pac-12, add two to the Big 10, two to the SEC, and two to the ACC, and now you've got four 16-team conferences. That leaves Notre Dame out, but ideally, you know, you bounce like a TCU or somebody. I know that's a good program. You'd have to figure that out, because if you do it the way that I propose, you don't get to have independence. And then you go to a 9-team conference schedule. You play three non-conference games to get to your 12, and you would just play one team from each of the other power conferences as your out of conference. So 9 SEC games, you play one ACC, one Pac-12, and one, what would be Big 10, Big 16, whatever you want to call it. And now you got a real schedule. Now you can watch Missouri play against Michigan and USC and Miami instead of watching them play UConn and Idaho. I mean, who cares? I just think you should all be playing good competition every year. And that way you don't have these stupid arguments at the end of the year about, you know, you didn't play anybody, you did play anybody, and I just don't like that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of college football is run by people who could care less about even competition. They just want the win, and they don't care who you're playing.
Yes, I think that's right. And you know, part of that, it's going back now on some years, but part of that is I think coaches all have bonuses for making bowl games and things. So, you know, there's actually incentive for them to play nobodies to get the six games to make sure they get the bonus, and then you can pay out your other assistant coaches and all the things you're doing. I 100% agree with you. I think you should only play other Power 5 schools. That's the Nick Saban theory. Well, Nick Saban tries as hard as he played USC to open the season last year. He played Wisconsin a couple years ago. He's actually trying to do what you're proposing. Is there really a reason to go play Southeast Louisiana? I just don't think so. And I don't think it's particularly good for the other schools either, because it just becomes a charity case. It's $1 million. If your players get hurt, sorry about that.
Yeah, I think maybe if they expanded the playoffs and had like an 8-team or 16-team playoff, then teams wouldn't be so scared to lose a game in non-conference that's ultimately going to cost them a chance to win the national title.
I agree with you. I think 16 might be too many, because then you're really moving stuff around. You have to either start the season in mid-August, or, you know, we're already go through finals and stuff. So you have to take that off, and then you're playing into February. That's a tougher thing, but I think if you you could go to 8, and then that just messes with 1 week. You start the season a week earlier, and guys get to, you know, have relatively similar schedules. Really, finals throw you off. It's tough. We treat college football like they're professionals, and they're not. And you have to block off 2 weeks for these kids to take finals, and that doesn't really jive with our, you know, the ideals of just playing along and saying you're messing up our schedule. We're trying to watch college football, but you can't bend the rules and say, yeah, sorry, we're just going to play our playoff right through your finals. Hope you graduate. So it is a tougher thing scheduling-wise, but I think the whole system needs to be revamped to some degree. I think the playoff as a whole was a good first step. And I do like the 14 playoff, because what makes college football so cool? It's all the debate. We'll sit and talk about who should be in the playoff for, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks leading up to it. And then it breaks down into it, and then somebody's always getting screwed. TCU got screwed in the first year. Usually there may be an undefeated or one lost team. There's debate. If you go to 8, do you really care about the 9th team? Yeah, there's debate, but not really. If you go to 16, there's really no debate. So that takes some of the luster off, but I think there's a case on both sides.
TJ Moe with us every Monday, presented by Joe Bacardi's. Missouri and UConn this Saturday. Doug, this is it.
It's the one I've had circled on the calendar for a long time, because it came out 3-4 years ago.
TJ, we appreciate it, sir. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
All right. Thank you,
TJ Moe with us here, brought to you by Joe Bacardi's. That Joe Bacardi's has some good pizzas, what I would tell you. Hey, shave it up, and shave it up real nice so I can do it inexpensively with Harry's Razors. I can tell you about Harry's Razors as a very happy client. For decades, one big razor company has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of their customers. So Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys, were fed up with getting ripped off, started Harry's.
to fix shaving. Harry's knew there was only one way to ensure quality, so they bought their own factory, and by taking less profit and selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's offers their blades at half the price. Just $2 a blade compared to the $4 or more you'll pay at the drugstore. Harry's razors include everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, weighted ergonomic handle, 5 precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they want you to try their shave set for free. You heard that right. Just cover shipping when you sign up. Plus, as a special offer for fans of the show, go to harrys.com right now and enter code INSIDESTL at checkout to get a post-shave balm also free. That's harrys.com, code INSIDESTL. Send your emails in, hotshots email today. It comes your way about 20 minutes, okay?
Okay.
Jamil Hill will make her return to SportsCenter after her two-week suspension. She talked it over with TMZ about her suspension. Plowhawk, if you have the...
Look, me and ESPN are fine. And it's just like, I know it's great conjecture to think about what might happen, but like, we're fine. We're in a good place. And I'm happy to be back at the network. And so, yeah, like, I don't have much to say beyond that. I want people to understand this. Like, there was never any restrictions placed on me about Twitter.
Okay.
Never. It doesn't really matter what I think. I think, you know, as
well, it matters to us.
No, it matters to people. But, like, here's the reality. It's like ESPN acted what they felt was right. And, you know, I don't have any argument or quibble with that. I would tell people absolutely after my Donald Trump tweets, I deserve that suspension. I deserve it. Like, wow. Absolutely. Like, I violated the policy. I deserve that suspension. As I said, like, the only thing I ever apologize for is, like, I put ESPN in a bad spot. I'll never take back what I said.
It's Jamil Hill who will return to the anchor desk today.
No, I wouldn't think, she said she had no restrictions. I wouldn't think any company actually comes out and tells you, here are the restrictions, what you can and cannot say. How could you possibly cover every possible topic that comes up? But there are the restrictions of common sense that I think everybody should follow. In the public eye, you can't just say whatever you want without consequences.
Brian Curtis of The Ringer wrote an in-depth piece on this situation for ESPN. And I'll be interviewing him for my podcast. I think we're doing that interview right after this show, Seamaster? Ballpark? Well, either way, Doug. I'll be standing by. And listen, if it's 11:30, I only live a couple minutes, so I'll come back up. I'll feed Jameson, and I'll come back up.
Okay. Does this kid just eat all the time?
He does eat a lot.
How often you got to feed him?
He seems to be, when he's up, in the 90 minutes to 2 hours range right now. Growing like a weed. Watch this. Growing like a weed.
Yeah. Boy, it goes fast. Yeah.
2 month birthday today. Having a bunch of people over. You guys want to come over? 2 month birthday parties? Do you guys do that?
Well, not really. Not really. Usually maybe 6 months when they're that young. Certainly a year. But no, not every 2 months.
I'm surprised that he didn't get him a present.
I think that's why he's doing the interview with. Who's he doing an interview with?
I don't know.
I don't have any idea.
Am I? He's going to do a postcard?
Yeah, for Jameson.
That's Suzanne Plachette or someone like that.
Oh, yeah. She's still kicking?
I think so. Yeah, had a great voice. Very low voice. Very
hell. You like guys with deep voice?
No, women.
Isaac Hayes?
No. Not really him, no.
Doug, The Six has been on the air for 8.5 months. But the problem that looms...
What is The Six?
The Jamil Hill Michael Smith Sports Center that airs at 5, except it's 6 Eastern. So it's called The Six.
All right.
The Six has been on the air for 8.5 months, but the problem that looms over the show is the same problem that loomed over it at conception. What is it? Before the show aired, Hill and Smith were worried enough that people would be confused, if not pissed off, about how they were changing SportsCenter, that they asked to change the show's name. ESPN refused, reasoning that Hill and Smith were merely continuing an evolution that Scott Van Pelt had begun on the Midnight Edition of SportsCenter. If you think of ESPN as a pendulum that swings between news and debate, The Six started on the debate side. It has since swung the other way. On Wednesday, when Smith was hosting solo, a viewer watching a block, or the A block, would have seen him chatting with Tim Legler
about Joel Embiid's usage. What do you think about Joel Embiid's usage? Trust the process.
I don't care much about any of it. He's a good player. He can get up and down the floor.
Yeah.
They would have seen him asking Pedro Gomez about the Dodgers and talking about Ezekiel Elliott's legal struggles and plugging ESPN's tip-off, NBA tip-off. But for Smith's unique style and DJ Jazzy Jeff's remixed theme song, the show sounded a lot like other news shows in the ESPN universe.
Who's writing this?
Brian Curtis. Okay. He's like a sports media guy.
All right.
Write some good pieces on The Ringer. You ever read The Ringer?
No. No. I really don't read the breakdowns of television shows.
Well, you should.
I'm hearing one now, so I guess as close as it gets.
Do you see Curb Your Enthusiasm last night?
No.
It's a pretty good one. Anybody see it? Nurse, Nancy, Chasey Lane? It's a pretty good one.
I haven't been up to par watching that. I should.
There is no real par involved. You watch what you want.
But I haven't had a chance, and I'm a fan of that show.
All right. I haven't seen it much.
Hill's suspension brought up a larger question, which Bill Simmons wrote about. Can ESPN carve out an apolitical space while Trump is president? Quote, the tension is not that they want to be apolitical, said one ESPN employee. The tension is that they want to be fashionably political. They want to be Oscar speech political, end quote. I really liked that description because I don't feel like it's a lot of nuance. I feel like it's like what's socially acceptable political statements,
right?
But not really taking a chance political statements. And I like that description, Oscar speech political. Like echo chamber applause line political.
Right.
I liked that.
Like left wing political?
Well, I would 99%, if not closer to 100% of Academy Award speeches over the last quarter century would certainly fall on the left wing side of things.
Oh, yeah.
But what I think is being said there, I don't know if it's necessarily left or right so much as it's like surface level lack of nuance political. And I think that's a good way to describe it. The employee said that in a weird way, Hill's tweets turned out to be helpful. Since Trump took office, a lot of ESPNers' Twitter feeds have been more politically conscious than they've ever been in the past. At the same time, ESPN's social media policy, like the New York Times' new policy, is vague and open to case-by-case enforcement. In calling Trump a, quote, white supremacist, the ESPN employee said Hill accidentally discovered the uncrossable line. Oh, so that's what we can't say about Trump.
Really? Really? You didn't think that would be a problem when she typed it out? Does anyone really watch ESPN for the political takes anyway? I mean, there's plenty of that out there. If that's what you're looking for, there's Fox News and there's CNN and there's MSNBC. There's plenty of it out there. Who goes to ESPN just sitting around waiting for some political hot takes?
Who out there is scrolling through Twitter and then says, boy, I would like a political take from a sports guy?
Yeah.
I mean, I know, and that's their right. Some sports guys do that quite a bit, and they feel that they want their message out there. I have no problem.
I kind of was a little curious about Watson's thoughts on the tax reform.
but I mean, honestly, it's almost like, is that really a benefit? Is that really a good thing that these people are more? No, I don't think so. I don't think that's what people are necessarily looking for. I'm not saying it's offensive to me or anything like that. I'm just saying I think people are looking for their hot political takes elsewhere.
Well, that's what the country is talking about, though. A lot of people in casual conversations with anybody, they're talking about political stuff now, probably more than they ever have before. And now everyone has a platform to say that publicly to the nation or the world or whoever follows them. So I don't think it's changed. Actors and actresses and sports people and other celebrities are not just for the first time giving political takes. It's just now you see them.
Yeah, I try to stay away from it because I don't really need
to avoid it.
That I know you're more comfortable doing that. I do Cardinal birthdays. One time I made a little joke about a certain political deal that I felt was more along the lines of Brock for Broglio.
Mm-hmm.
And I got destroyed. So I just
What
let
did
it
you
go.
Do? What did you do last week?
It was a joke. I think it was maybe the Iran nuclear deal seemed like we were getting Broglio. It was just a joke trying to put in baseball terms.
I kind of like it.
And it wasn't even it wasn't really political, like partisan, this or that. It just, when they released the terms and I read it, it didn't seem like we were getting a ton.
No.
And this not coming from Republican or Democrat, I couldn't care. I just read it and I thought, it doesn't seem like we're getting the better end of this.
No.
So that I put that out there, and then I was like, yeah, I'm not doing that again. Because I wasn't even trying to be political.
It upset people.
It was trying to be a joke about and bring it into baseball.
I've gotten a little exposure to this over the last, 72 hours. I mean, I guess I'm aware it's there, but I don't really wade into the waters, which is a conscious decision. I interviewed Jack Danforth on the podcast. I'm interviewing Ed Martin Wednesday. Both Republicans, but different kinds of Republicans.
Right.
And Ed Martin will be here in the Kirkwood studios, and I'll be interviewing him. That's Wednesday, right, Seamaster, after the show, if I'm not mistaken? Yeah, so that'll be a podcast.
That podcast can be humming, because I got one before that. That podcast.
Oh, you're doing one. You're doing. DeYoung. DeYoung on Wednesday.
Before, yeah.
Ed's coming in on at 11 o'clock. So anyway,
It'll work.
Doug, it'll work out. Don't worry. My point is,
Seymour's on it. Seymour, good for you.
Seamaster's on it. But here's my point. So we, we're buying advertising on Facebook to promote the podcast, make more people aware of it, more people subscribe. The John Mozeliak one is up just a couple hours ago. For those of you just tuning in the 9 o'clock hour, it's a 45-minute interview with the Cardinal president of baseball operations. But the Tioka Jackson interview, I wanted to interview Tioka Jackson. Again, when I do these interviews, and I understand it because it's probably not the normal style that goes on now. Like when Clay was in, for example, it was more of a conversation. I feel like a lot of interviews right now, and I understand it, especially since it works, are more about, especially cable news style interviews, about, okay, yes, they said that, but then they did this before over here, i.e., it's called gotcha, which inevitably has an unintentional or intentional negative connotation. My point is, it really isn't focusing on the issue you're interviewing the person about. It's then so-and-so said this, but then how could they possibly say this if they said that? And so a few people, overwhelmingly, the feedback has been quite positive on these interviews, but some people have, it's not coincidental. People who are conservative really like the Clay Travis interview. People who are liberal really like the Tioka Jackson interview. I just see the person's name, and if I know who they are, I'm like, oh, I know where this is going before I even read it. But with the Facebook ad campaign, it's reaching people who are not familiar, I'm not familiar with, they're not familiar with me, whatever the case might be. And the Tioka Jackson was, I wanted to interview him because I wanted to, for me personally, and I thought it might lead to good broadcasting, I wanted to understand the mindset, because from my standpoint, as a white guy, I don't have negative experiences with the police. For me personally, that doesn't mean me as white people do not have negative experiences. With, I haven't had negative. I got a speeding ticket in South Carolina that's causing issues with my driver's license. We were 8 miles over the speed limit. That's a problem. But as far as the way we were treated, that's not it. So that's my extent. Plus, I didn't play in the NFL. Should have. Politics.
Oh, gosh. With your size?
Thank you.
Who wouldn't have wanted you playing a cock-nose tackle? You're a run stuffer, bro.
Thank you. So, since I don't have those things in common with many of the people or all of the people who are protesting in the NFL, I wanted to hear the reasons from Tioka. And because I know him, and I know he's a very intelligent man. And I know his interviews, no matter what you're talking about, are usually pretty captivating. So that's why I had him on. So then this gentleman who we have working with us at Inside STL puts out the Facebook post, and then it reaches people who otherwise wouldn't be reached, like on the fan page or the people who follow me on Twitter, follow Inside STL on Twitter, whatever the case might be. And the hatred for the interview, and I can tell they didn't listen to it, but it's a default click position. You're talking about protests. They see a picture of a black guy. And it's like vile. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm not used to seeing this. Like, I know it's there, but holy crap, it's something else. Like, it almost makes me wonder if they're like the supposed fictitious Facebook accounts that are created to, like, cause crap. And I'm not used to seeing that because, again, I just choose not to try to be in the mix of that kind of discussion. So my whole point, I know there are people who listen and they're like, yeah, I don't agree with the protest, but it was interesting to hear his perspective, because it's not like he's Mr. You know, I think his father was in the military, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know which war he fought in.
and his nephew is a Washington, D.C. police officer. So he's coming at it from a variety of different perspectives and explaining it as opposed to condemning those who don't agree, which I thought was a productive discussion.
And we know him to be a fair-minded guy because we've talked to him on a number of football issues over the years. That's what people should try to do, is try to understand someone else's perspective. If you automatically jump in on team ideology and block it out, we're not getting anywhere. Right. And I always say this, I'll say it again, I don't care if people text in and say, I say it too much, but I think in this country and what we're going through together politically, everyone has to stop themselves and understand when you're listening to someone else's perspective, just because you disagree doesn't mean they're a bad person. Let's try to get past that. I think that's so important. And everyone gets, you know, obviously emotional about some of these issues because they affect all of us. It's our country. All of us. We're in it together. But just because you disagree with someone, try to understand that that doesn't make them evil or bad. Just try to hear them out.
Which is interesting that you say that, because then I can speak to the... So I listened to Axelrod's podcast, David Axelrod, chief of staff for President Obama, at least for the first, I think, first half of his term. And he had Jeff Rowe on. You familiar with Jeff Rowe?
No.
When I say who he is, he's a campaign strategist. And he was he worked on Ted Cruz's campaign. But if I'm not mistaken, he was handling Catherine Hanaway's campaign. And he was blamed in part for the what wound up happening with the suicide of Tom Schweik. The advertising right. campaign was harsh. But I mean, he works on, he's a campaign strategist from Western Missouri. And then I was also listening to Jason Cantor, who coincidentally also from Western Missouri, and he ran against Roy Blunt, lost, did very well, considering that the state went for Trump by, is it 19%? 17%, okay. Yeah. And he only lost by a couple percentage points, and he's considered an up-and-comer on the Democratic side. Younger guy, younger than me, and already has been in the mix, and he's Missouri Secretary of State. And both of them said, and I'm paraphrasing here, you'd have to listen to the interviews to get the exact words, that they would not be interested in working for someone who didn't share their viewpoints. And I'm not talking about their politics as in politicians. I'm talking about in general, in the workforce, working for somebody. Like, in other words, Doug, if you were my boss, well, we have different politics, so therefore I wouldn't work for it. And that just, that strikes me as very...
Well, you think that comes up all the time.
Odd.
People who work places where they don't share the same political opinions with their boss, that probably happens all the time.
And I remember hearing it, I guess the first one I listened to, yeah, it was the first one I listened to was Candor. And I remember hearing that, and I go, God, I want to go back and listen to it. But then I heard Rose say it, and I'm like, what in the world? They both feel that way. Like, I couldn't care, like, you know, like, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. Like, what does it matter? But I guess, I don't know, is that more and more commonplace that somebody wouldn't want to work somewhere where the person doesn't have their viewpoints or wouldn't want to hang out with somebody if they don't have their viewpoints?
I would imagine
most of my friends are probably going to be conservative. I would imagine. I don't know. I don't really talk about it that much.
Yeah, how do you know that going in? You don't interview your boss and find out what his political stance is. And most people aren't in a position where they can quit their job because they found out their boss might have a different political opinion on some subject. I think that's more grandstand talk than anything else.
Most
people aren't in a position to say, my boss thinks that, I quit. Yeah, well,
I wonder if
paycheck,
it's most like everything
get.
Else. It's the people that yell the loudest that we think represent most of us, where it's not necessarily the case. I do think, though, that there is some truth that people are more polarized now than they've been in a long time.
I agree with that. I do agree with that. Now, Tioka's opinion on that was social media presents an illusion, essentially, on the polarization. You know, that it's exaggerated because that's what you see. Like, yeah. the ass hats are the ones that people quote, retweet, and then mock, and you can pick whichever.
Yeah, but you can see it in news, read the paper, read online,
that.
Aside from just Twitter or Facebook.
Let's see. Wasn't there a CEO that sent an email to all employees saying they might as well resign if they vote for Trump? I don't know. That was Eminem, I think, did that about two weeks ago.
I remember that. It was like Pepsi or Coca-Cola or somebody like that. Yeah, oh yeah, that was a big story for about a day and a half until something else came up.
Hey, Jim Hayes, do you live in a 95% white neighborhood, our 95% black neighborhood? We know which one. All right, Doug. Sometimes You guys are going to have to, like, there might be an autocorrect.
You have to spell a little bit better than that for us to know exactly what you're talking
about. There's not a period or comma. Reminds me of when I would read emails from the man and woman.
What's the
executive.
Rest of it?
It just says, "Hey, Jim Hayes, do you live in a 95% white neighborhood, A-R-E, 95% black neighborhood? We know which one."
What does that have to do with anything?
I think it pretty much says who you are.
What does
that
have to do with what I just said?
Someone just kind of got right to the grassroots of it.
Did I say something divisive here?
I don't know why you had to go there. This guy has called you out on it, clearly.
Here's the solution. Snopes before you share. That's from Cooking with Mike Kitchen.
And what does that mean? Snopes before you care. Cooking with Mike Kitchen.
You
my head hurts.
The website's a fact-checking website before you share.
Even that is two people. It's a man and a woman.
Is it really?
Yeah. It's a married couple that does that. And suddenly they get to decide what's exactly true or not. That's one of the worst things that have come out of this whole last election cycle, I think, is you don't know what you can believe in the news. At any level, you don't know what to believe. You got the New York Times not running stories. You got NBC not running stories because it doesn't believe
it. You do read InfoWars and sometimes believe that.
I've never read InfoWars in my life.
Wait, I thought you did. I thought you had the earpiece thing. I thought that
wasn't InfoWars story, but you don't know that Doug got it from there.
That's a big thing that you can't trust the news anymore. It is so agenda driven. It used to be you could turn on the networks and you didn't know what their politics were.
You know, I was watching.
But can you say it's on both sides?
Well, yes, it's on both sides.
I was watching Bill Maher, which is obviously
a comedy show.
A comedy show, but you know, certainly liberal. And I think. I mean, again, it's comedy, so whatever. It's not like he's trying to be at CNN.
It's political comedy,
and certainly. But I don't know. I think, in a sense, as much as I find it to be entertaining at times, I think the condescension would rub people the wrong way, or could, or does rub the people the wrong way. With that said, and he had Margaret Hoover. Herbert Hoover's like either great granddaughter or granddaughter. She's a Republican strategist.
She's a blonde
mistaken.
Woman?
Yes.
I think I know.
Either way, she was on and she kind of said, well, you rip Trump for being condescending and saying ignorant things, but then you're on your show and you say condescending and ignorant things. It's kind of like, you got to hold up the mirror. But anyway, what he was saying regarding what you're making reference to, I think, Doug, which is the Harvey Weinstein and Saturday Night Live not covering it.
And NBC News, who had the story long time
right.
ago.
Right, and then they didn't. And then who is it? Ronan, he's...
Farrell.
Woody Allen.
Ronan Farrell.
Right, so anyway, the Saturday Night Live thing, and he was making the observation was James Corden hosts some award show. He makes jokes about Harvey Weinstein. He gets killed, has to issue an apology. Then Saturday Night Live chooses not to make jokes about Harvey Weinstein, and they get killed. And he goes, it's a weird spot because what can you do? What's the safe play? And on that spot, what is the safe play? If they joke about it, people say it's not a laughing matter. James Corden does joke about it, and they say it's not a laughing matter.
Okay, comedy, they can do whatever they want. It's up to them to judge. Now, if they go over the line, there's a price to pay. I think every comedian knows that. And it's up to them. But I do think the stuff with Harvey Weinstein apparently everyone knew this over the years. Everyone, big stars.
Right.
And now it all comes
but
out.
But no one reported it.
Yeah.
And my point about NBC is the president of NBC News, Noah Oppenheim, was in Chelsea Clinton's wedding. These people are all tied in together. And so many of the people at the very top of these networks all have very close connections in politics as well, and that is what has led to this current era of media that we're in at the network level anyway, where everybody seems to have an agenda. They don't just report, here's the news. They don't do it anymore. They used to, but they don't do it anymore.
Damn it, answer the question, Jim Hayes. That's from P-Hump.
Is it 95% white or is it 95% black? Where do you live?
I don't really know the... Rachel, I would say there's more Cox where I live, but I don't know the exact number.
Yeah.
But there is a...
I don't know why you're evading the question.
Pretty diverse group. It's not just whites or blacks. There are other nationalities represented.
NBC, Fox, and CNN are not news. They are TV programs. That's from Cruddy from Winghaven. What do you consider a news outlet that is, bell curve-wise, going to have the most
Facts. No, honestly.
The most, I don't think, I think you, the one, one of the things I do agree with Doug, and this goes on both sides, I never just read something without knowing where it came from. You know when people send you stuff or retweet stuff? I need to know, because I think every one of them has some sort of spin to it. That doesn't mean everything is biased or everything is unfair, but to me there is a slant to it, and I want to be aware of the slant as I read it so that I can put it in proper context. I think that goes on like crazy.
Here's my analysis on CNN. I truly believe, and I voted, this is when I voted for George W. Bush in 2000, which I'm sure would make some people fall out of their chairs. I didn't see it as the Clinton News Network thing. I know that's what it was labeled as during the 1990s. And I didn't even see it the first, I don't even know, 12 years as being one way or the other. I feel like recently they saw how successful the strategy was for Fox News and are like, okay, we see the hatred for Donald Trump. We're going to capitalize on this. I feel like, and that's, so that's a recent thing over the last 700, 800 days. That's my opinion. Now, some people say, oh my God, it's been going on since the 1990s. That was the reason for the birth of Fox News.
And when I hear their anchors discuss it, they go, our job is to hold truth to power, which is true. And Trump has the power now. I just don't remember them being so active in challenging things that the Obama administration did, like the Health Care Act, to me, which had so many problems, which everyone knew about, including having to make two states exempt just so they vote in favor of it, and then using that parliamentary procedure to push the thing through, reconciliation, there was not that same attack mode from CNN back then over something that needed to be questioned as everything that Trump does now. I didn't see them holding truth to power as much during the previous administration.
No. CNN has taken it to a cartoonish level now, their attacks on the administration. That's all they do. And none of the networks, I saw a story on this in the Washington Post the other day. Only CBS, among the major news networks, has even mentioned these new revelations coming out of Russia about the uranium deal that ties in Hillary Clinton and Mueller and Obama, all of them. They just don't even talk about it. It never even comes up. Wouldn't even know it if you don't watch other networks and read other things.
My favorite.
This is going to be an enormous story that's going to take down a lot of these people. They don't even report it. They never even mention it.
My favorite thing that you see on Twitter now, because videos and snippets from the pundits are so great, and that you see this one, watch so-and-so take down this Republican strategist with one thing, or if Fox News tweets it out, watch Tucker Carlson take out with, you know, one sentence or whatever. And you look at the clip and it's, they didn't take him down or whatever. It's because there's team ideology and it's one against the other. And we have to destroy you, which is bad.
Doug Snopes has a staff of at least 16 people. The main guy, Mickelson's wife, is an admin assistant, not a writer. Snopes, before you speak, now open wide so I can tickle your throat.
Yeah, see there, supposed to believe him.
Barry Longwood. Hey, you know, I know this is something that I actually learned, and it certainly can help your cause in keeping your comfort level at your home at an optimal margin. Keep dust levels down, less visible dust in your home, because I can tell you about this firsthand. It's filter easy. Americans spend 90% of their time indoors, where concentrations of pollutants are 2 to 5 times higher than the typical outdoors. And with Filter Easy, it helps filter out airborne allergens. If you suffer from asthma or allergies, keeping the air of your home cleaner can make a huge, huge difference. And with this, Filter Easy, it solves the number one problem with home air filters, forgetting to change them. Filter Easy takes care of all of that for you. The average homeowner changes their home air filters 1 to 2 times a year, but the minimum it should be done is 4 times a year. So this is a physical reminder to make having clean air in your home easy and delivered to your door. You don't have to worry about the hassle of storing extras. You won't ever forget to change the air filters in your home again. Save 5 to 15% on home air conditioning costs by keeping your air conditioning and heating systems cleaner. Save on maintenance of your air conditioner. Get started today. FilterEasy.com is offering all TMA listeners their first delivery of standard 1-inch air filters for free with free shipping. Never forget to change your air filter again and visit filtereasy.com/TIM or enter promo code TIM on the homepage. Doug, that's Tim.
Yeah, imagine that. Wasn't that convenient?
Do you think I contact the ad agency and say, hey?
I think you might. Yeah.
No, it's not true.
Maybe
my dad did.
This lemming thing has even spread there. I don't know.
New York. Hey, it's time for Hot Shots Email It.
Be-doo-bop.
Well, hello again. Yes, it's that time again for Construction Tips with Colin, and I'm your host, Colin. Today, the big scuttlebutt is all about bathroom dividers. Well, you're in luck. I'm just the guy to learn you how to go about doing it.
Doesn't it teach you how to go about
doing it? Yes, yeah, that'd be proper English.
Here we go. Step one, buy metal bathroom divider at plumbing supply store. Step two, use 3-inch lag bolts to secure divider to floor and wall.
Right.
Step three, get a drill with a 3-inch hole saw bit. Step four, about 30 inches from the floor or pelvic height, drill a hole through divider.
Right.
Step five, duct tape the rough edges of hole.
Well, that doesn't make sense to me.
Step six, invite your stepdad into the bathroom to enjoy the most delicious under-the-urinal burger his DSLs have ever tasted. Step seven, tap your toe and have him position himself on the other side of the divider. Step eight, have him drop his pant and place himself in the hole proper, and voila, you have installed the bathroom divider.
I beg your pardon?
No, this email gets, no way this email gets to this part. So I'll just say, be-doo-bop-dee-boo, I'm Clallon. And until next time, do it yourself, boy. That's from Cucky the Float Tank Boy.
Cucky the Float Tank Boy.
It got to the end. I didn't think it would, Doug.
Well, yeah, I like construction advice. Some of it seemed to
Doug,
go off the rails.
This is from bikini model Brittany.
Okay. The leggy blonde?
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
I've always fantasized about what she was wearing as she walked around in the apartment above mine when she used her master key to interrupt our games. I found out. I haven't seen a more erotic display of my favorite material since that goody two-shoes Richie Cunningham failed to close the deal with Leather Tuscadaro. Darrow?
Darrow.
As her thigh-high black boots extenuated the toned muscles? Is that the proper use?
Probably not. No. Extended, maybe.
In her lipstick lesbian legs, she bent the three of us over the couch with our lingerie-clad firm buttocks pointing upwards. Looks to me like you naughty girls have been up to some hanky-panky, she said. Now it's time for some spanky-spanky. Doug, that's from Bikini Model Brittany. God, these are so hot.
Model, but they're not that hot, really. They just aren't.
Guys, Plops here. Larry posted on Facebook. Larry posted on Facebook that he won't be attending the next TMA Live because he tripped on the stairs at the Scott Trade Center last week while at a WWE event and injured his foot. Guys, I kid you not, I went to a WWE event last year, and the moment I spotted Nixie two sections over, he tripped on the stairs, just barely stopping himself from flying over the boards. Has the back strap on his Birkenstocks finally shot craps? Has the cork sole finally rotted out, making stairways that much more hazardous? We're talking about an event where guys are doing backflips onto concrete floors, diving off the top turnbuckles, and throwing each other through tables for 3 hours. And the one guy who leaves the building in such bad shape that he can't be driven by someone else to a bar to sit in a chair 7 days later is Larry. Mm. He even clarified in his post that the injury occurred as he was going up the stairs. How bad can you hurt your tiny foot stumbling on your way up the stairs? Were you in a mad rush to get to a higher elevation in the arena so you could snap a better shot of Seth Rollins' happy trail? Guys, he's acting like he's bedridden with his legs and stirrups over there. Then it was pointed out by a listener that at the last TMA Live, Larry was also complaining about a foot injury. Larry jumped to his own defense, though, saying, yeah, but that time it was my left. This time it's my right. For God's sakes, Larry, the Texas Tornado, Kerry Von Erich, God rest his soul, didn't even have a foot. You know what he did? He hid that from everyone so they'd let him wrestle, and he won the Intercontinental Championship. Man the F up. Misty Plops.
He had a foot.
Misty Plops.
He had a foot, Monty.
He had a foot, Monty.
Why, hello, young lass. I couldn't help but stare at your Mizzou sweater and miniskirt. Can I buy your next Rob Roy? I'm sure you recognize me from the local St. Louis News. Oh, what's that? My scent? Pure aqua velva and khaki pant. Why not let me whisk you away to a rendezvous with me and ladies journalism? I can offer you butterscotch and Wright business product pens. You can rest your feet on my Davenport while Lady J has her way with me. Afterwards, I'll send you checks for $12 on your birthday every year. Oh, it's a no then? Oh, well. On to the boys, I guess.
No.
Doug Collins, illicit East Side lover.
I'm not giving that a check, Mark.
No, I won't either.
It wasn't bad, though.
No, it was bad.
All that college basketball got me fired up to check out to see if Ladorty has updated his bracketology from June. And guess what, Doug? He did.
What?
Let's break this down. Back in June, he had Mizzou on the next four out.
but after a few months of hard practice, they now move into his last four in. Surprisingly, he still has Louisville as a two seed playing Loyola Chicago in Nashville. This is a game I personally could see Loyola winning. Texas Tech, St. Bonaventure, and Maryland fans, no need to worry, as you're also the last teams to get in. Arkansas, Clemson, San Diego State, and Oklahoma State head home. I've got nothing for you, but you're the first four out. He has Michigan State playing in Detroit. Boy, that's going to be tough to beat them there.
Okay.
It's from the White Collar Gangster.
How long? White Collar Gangster.
Michigan State and Detroit will be tough.
Yeah, sure they will be, but let's let the season play out just a little bit before we assign brackets.
Guys, I wanted to weigh in on the Olive and Oak bathroom discussion.
A little late, but go ahead.
So it's pretty obvious none of you guys are big-time businessmen, because if you were, you'd know that most, if not all, power deals are negotiated in a single-room public restroom with no dividers and one gentleman working the bowl with the other weeing in the urinal to his left.
I don't think so.
This sets up and allows for direct eye contact as well as the sharing of an intimate moment. The smells and splashes build trust by humanizing the other party while at the same time allowing both gentlemen to size up the other's maleness. When the deal is finally agreed to, the bull gentleman can set a plate of treats on his lap for easy sharing. You know, something classy like a few pieces of sushi to celebrate. Really cuts through the BS. It's business 101.
It is.
Hope that helps. It's from Timmy Tom Tom.
None of that made sense to me. Timmy Tom Tom.
We don't understand business.
That's what we have for the Hot Shots email today.
I didn't really put a bunch of check marks down.
Not much to pick from.
I'll go Timmy Tom Tom.
I guess when in doubt, I'll give it to the construction tips, because sometimes
you really like that.
Sometimes you can pick up some things from Cucky. So I'll say,
I mean,
Cucky,
he told you how to construct a glory hole.
Well, I thought he was talking about
those don't exist.
No, well, they don't really. It was all fiction. But he was telling you how to put a partition
with a
between
dad.
The
urinals. With a stepdad.
A stepfather receiving oral.
Honestly, yeah,
whatever examples they use.
What's wrong with you?
I would like to learn more about construction.
Congratulations to Cucky. You have won. Cucky, the float tank boy, has won the Hot Shots email of the day. It's time for us to shut it down. Frank's up next. He does a real program. It's called the Hollywood Casino Press Box for the Sea Monster, for the Plowhawk, for Iggy, for Brother Kevin, for Douglas Elvin Vaughn, for Jimmy the Cat Hayes. I'm Tim McCarty. This has been the Ryan Kelly Morning After on 590 The Fan KFNS live from the Gateway Butte GMC Studios.